Our next presenter is Stephen Jones, and he's a biostatical, biostatistical, biostatical, research scientist in the Medical Informatics Department of Blue Cross Blue Shield, Tennessee. He serves as a team lead for to staff epidemiologists, analysts, and interns. He manages GIS for the company-wide research and development efforts and geospatial analytical support. Stephen's responsible for proactively addressing areas of concern related to evidence-based guidelines, compliance and research deficiencies with interest in improving healthcare quality and reducing health disparities. He earned his PhD in biology from Clemson and is working on his postdoctoral project with the Harvard Pilgrim Healthcare Institute. Please welcome Steve.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Thank you guys for coming. This is probably going to be a little different than maybe what you guys are typically exposed to. If there's a lot of veterinarians in the room. I'm by no means a veterinarian, as the bio just said. My background's in biostatistics and spatial epidemiology and things like that. And this was an interesting project that I engaged in, which I think you'll all be able to relate to. And as just we were getting to some of your last questions with underreporting, this is an attempt, an approach to introduce a new methodology and a new data source to help us with a lot of the underreporting of infectious diseases, in particular to what we did here. But obviously the methods and the data could be used for any of the other underreported diseases that are out there and those that are just not as prevalent. So I have nothing to disclose. Write that 10 times. So again, zoonosis, also referred to as zoonotic diseases, those that can be transmitted from or through animals to humans. And a lot of this stuff you guys know because this is what you do day in and day out, but a very significant concern for public health, accounting for about 75% of the emergent infectious diseases, and about 60% of these diseases have some animal origin. And arthropods, those things like ticks and mites and spiders, as you know, serve as vectors for a lot of the transmission of these diseases. And when we talk about zoonotic diseases being reportable, it's really a CDC term, there's several different levels of reporting that needs to go on depending on the type of disease it is. I think rabies is a 1A. I'm not sure. I'm sure somebody in the audience would know that. But it would require immediate phone consultation or reporting by the doctor, and then a written within a week, and then there's a 1B and a Category 2, and it goes down in severity. The idea is that it's well-known and it's well-published, the significant underreporting that goes on. There's been many, many published studies, many of them in the Northeast as well, especially with Lyme disease, where it's endemic disease. Physician surveys reporting as much as a 12-fold underreporting of the disease. Doctors being surveyed, responding that even though this registry system, they know it to be the main vehicle to report this, that they don't use it quite often. About a third of doctors surveyed said that, yes, they treated patients for Lyme disease, but they actually never reported it. So the literature is very vast in this, and it's a significant problem, and it also creates a problem when you're trying to study these diseases because you're limited to what's reported to the CDC, and they have their state registry system. So you're limited if you want to do any sort of academia or academic research. You're really limited to not only from a sampling size standpoint, but any sort of physician bias that may go on in the reporting because doctors who train together may be more apt to report if other doctors in the area have an infectious disease background or something like that, so they may be more in tune to that. And so you may actually have some reporting bias that would go on. And so from a statistical standpoint and the spatial and temporal standpoint, we're really that overall inherent bias limits us to study those diseases as they spread and where they may cluster. So space is just where things are happening, and time is when they're happening. So all of those things put together really limit our ability to study and track those diseases effectively. So for the last 6 years, I've worked with a health plan in Tennessee, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Tennessee, And this is just a level set some of the terminology. MCOs, managed care organizations, health plans, health insurance companies, all go by the same thing. Slightly different than an HMO, but this is a plan that's been around since the 30s, and it's an affiliation. So the way these plans work, they're state-oriented. And we're both cover government and commercial members, so there's no bias in the type of people that we cover. There's no bias in socioeconomic status and where they are. They're all over the state. We actually represent a little over half of the entire state, so we've got a little over 3 million members in our population. And so you think about that here's this vast, gigantic database that sits out there that's not really being tapped. It's not being utilized at all. And very, very little work has really been done in this area of using this administrative data source, especially in tracking in zoonosis, but even in tracking in diseases in general. Just this morning, I caught a study from Dr. Green, and she spoke to this in some of her work, and they're actually doing some interesting things with GI diseases using EMR data. And so this was an intent to really... first, see if it's a viable source. So can it be used? Is it effective? Is it valid? And then actually, if it is, how might we be able to leverage that information? And then how might we do some actual spatial temporal modeling of where these diseases and outbreaks might occur? And then you guys can obviously extrapolate that into your own worlds and know that if you could get that information very quickly and very systematic, and the ability to set up your sentinel systems and set up your proactive surveillance monitoring, that it really may introduce a new concept. And again, I want to be clear that this isn't an attempt to replace the reporting system. This is to act as a supplement, as a complement, because you're going to see that as we go through this, that our data doesn't necessarily always overlap or agree, and so we really need to think about combining those data sources. And another interesting thing with the passing of the Affordable Care Act, the Secretary is calling for actually an integration of public and private data, which is pretty interesting, and this really gets at the heart of that, in integrating that public data and integrating it with the private payer system. So this is just a basic example of what the data might actually look like. This is a very simplistic snapshot of how the data might look in a data warehouse. And you would have a patient ID, which would be unique to that member or that patient. You'd have a lot of demographic information about them, their female or their gender, their date of birth, where they live, actually to their residential location as well as their zip code. And on a medical claim, what happens is when the member goes and seeks care at a facility or with a doctor, they'll actually code where that person lives at the time they sought service, right? So there's a historical capture of where that person actually resided when they sought services. It'll give you the data service as well. So now you have this space-time stamp that's been put on this electronic medical record, right? So we know exactly when they sought care and where they lived at the time they sought that care. And then we'll actually know why they sought care. So in a medical claim, that's just a diagnosis code. There might be a set of procedure codes, which would go along with that. And that would tell us what they had an issue with. So what we looked at were 7 different diseases, 5 tick-borne and 2 mosquito-borne diseases. The first was Lyme disease. Second was babesiosis, which is a very uncommon malaria-like illness. Never been reported in Tennessee before. Rocky Mountain spotted fever. This is probably our most common problem in Tennessee when it comes to tick-borne diseases. Ehrlichiosis, or HME, human monocytic ehrlichiosis, again on the rise as well. And a lot of these carry very similar symptoms, and so a lot of times they'll go untreated or they'll just go unknown to actually how to treat, and so there's a delay between when they're exposed to the disease and when they seek care. Tularemia, very uncommon as well. And then our 2 mosquito-borne diseases were lacrosse viral encephalitis and West Nile. Right, so these are the seven diseases we looked at to see if we compared Tennessee Department of Health reported data to administrative medical claims data and tried to match that up over space and time, how might that look? The way I did this was using a randomized control block design, and essentially that's just a general linear mixed model. So it says, let's adjust for population, let's adjust for space, let's adjust for these things, and so we can actually then we can compare more of an apples to apples because we've got different underlying populations, right? You've got the Tennessee Department of Health data, which is the underlying denominator would be all of Tennesseans or those reported to the state. And then you've got our denominator, which would be our member population. So we need to adjust for those types of things. And this is what we found. So our 10-year time period, we had about 60 million medical claims that were processed during this time period. About 1,600 of those actually fell within the diseases we're looking at. And the interesting thing was that we found three cases of babesiosis in our medical claims, and again, had never been reported before in the state of Tennessee. Now I did some, we can talk later, but I did some back scrubbing of the admin data to make sure we were getting what we needed. And it could be improved as well. That's one of the limitations. So this is what our Lyme disease looks like in comparison to TDH data. The black line is TDH, Tennessee Department of Health, and the blue line is the Blue Cross MCO data. So this is across time. So for each year, we looked at an incidence rate. And you can see consistently the health plan or the medical claims data reported much higher numbers than the Tennessee Department of Health did. And there's some obvious reasons for that. Rocky Mountain spotted fever, underreported for the first 4 or 5 years, and then you can see the TDH data really sort of overtook it there, and then towards the last 2 or 3 years, that data tended to agree a little better. Seasonality of the diseases tracked pretty well together, and so you guys know why they're happening in the summer months. The interesting thing is that the MCO data lagged just about a month or two, just slightly behind it. And I go back to the earlier statement of when you're exposed to the disease and when you actually seek treatment, right? So there's a time lag there of when you're exposed to it and when you actually go to seek that treatment. And I think that's what this data is picking up on. So then we did some spatial temporal modeling. We used SatScan. If you haven't used that, it's a very great tool to do some spatial temporal model clustering. And I did some spatial and temporal overlay of our data to the TDH data. The our data, the Blue Cross data, is in the blue line, and the dashed circle is the Tennessee Department of Health. So you can see where there were significant clusters of Lyme disease outbreaks, and then you can see when those outbreaks were. And what you'll see in the next couple of slides is that we picked up significant clusters, but they didn't overlap neither in space nor time. And then for West Nile virus, we actually didn't have a significant cluster from MCO data. We do have one at the zip code level that centers right on that. That's another work, a different paper that we did. But it's so it actually picked up on the zip code level. This is all county level data. And so that's the other benefit to using some of this administrative claims data is we can get down to a much finer granularity. So I'm probably out of time, but just to say that This needs to be studied further. In this initial study, we're seeing some differences, so they could be attributed to many different things. One is they are different; they're different data sources. We think that they'll complement each other versus contradict one another. And so, when we talk about a system to set up that we could help the CDC and the Tennessee Department of Health or other state health departments, where they need to focus their efforts in determining where these outbreaks might occur. This would be in a systematic electronic format, so it would help them prioritize their efforts versus having that inability to do that. Any questions?
We have time for
a point. That was a fast 15 minutes.
One question. And there may be some afterwards. Go ahead, please. Introduce yourself.
I'm Marcia Taylor. I'm an epidemiologist from Vancouver, BC, Canada. And
beautiful area.
Mm-hmm. Where all physicians, everybody sees a physician and it's billed automatically. So we use physician administrative, which is quite similar.
Right.
What are the codes? Is that the physician diagnostic, or is that they've actually requested a lab for that? Because so I query your babesiosis, that that physician has made a diagnostic decision that it could be babesiosis,
right,
or it could be Lyme, or it could be
RMS, yeah,
and they just coded one of three possible.
Right.
That's
so
the issue with non.
Yep, so the way we address that, because these aren't necessarily lab confirmed, the way you address that is when we deal with an ICD-9 code, there's a root level that you could code at. So we make the assumption that a physician's coding at a very specific babesiosis code, that they're not coding at a 066, which is arthropod-like disease. So if we made the assumption that if they're coding at that specific of a five-digit level, that they have confirmed evidence to put that on the claim.
The major limitation is assuming,
yeah,
that physician knows what he's coding as and not,
right,
thinking he's actually coding as any bias that the code one off, we had that.
Right, and we actually scrubbed for that as well. We did a system where we only took valid claims that had at least, it had to be coded three times on the same claim to remove any errors.
Okay.